This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
All righty, thanks for joining us on the Thursday edition of The Agenda. Dave Bernstein here, along with Wenatchee Mayor Frank Kuntz. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Welcome, Dave. Thanks for having me here. It's great to be here.
Well, last time I saw you, it was Memorial Day ceremonies, and we were just kind of looking up at the TV there, some of the 75th anniversary D-Day programs, and we were just looking at a 95-year-old gentleman who was there. Don't know if he was there at Normandy, but just, I guess, your thoughts, since you had to deliver some of the Memorial Day proclamations on our greatest generations and their contributions to really saving our world at that terrible day in history.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was listening to something earlier today, or read something about, you know, warfare today is totally different than warfare was 75 years ago. Right? It was hand-to-hand combat with guns, heavy machinery. You know, today it's a laser-guided missile shot from an airplane at 40,000 feet, right? It's just totally different. And, you know, my generation and those younger than me, I'm 56, you know, never really have had the generation that had to go fight for in that manner that they had to in Normandy on D-Day, and just the number of airplanes and combat troops and all the stuff that it took to have that battle that day is pretty amazing. And to see someone who's 95 years old on TV talking about it, he was there, that's pretty incredible.
Well, can you imagine yourself, think back to when you were 20?
Absolutely not. No way could I think
18,
of myself
19-year-old. Yeah.
Being in that position.
And it was great to hear the French president reminding the youth of today what was done by that generation to save their country.
Yep.
I was especially pleased to hear those remarks. Well, glad that you're here today. Speaking of freedoms, that was one of the topics I wanted to ask you about. Wenatchee deciding to go to a district format to vote. In the past, our city council had all been voted at large. Everyone voted for everyone, and the decision was made to change the entire process to try and get more individual, portions of the community better representation. How do you think the process went in attracting, because we haven't gone through the whole process yet, attracting more representation around the community?
You know, I think overall, I was sort of nervous during the week filing period that are we going to get enough folks from District 1 and District 4 to run? You know, early on, there wasn't much sort of participation, but, you know, at Friday at 5, when you sit and you look back and you go, you know, District 1, which is sort of a South Wenatchee district, we've got two very capable candidates that have put their name in the hat, and that's wonderful. District 4, which is sort of central Wenatchee, kind of in and around the Grandview Historic District and kind of shoots across, you know, Emerson and Franklin on the east side of Miller Street, and then it works over sort of by Lewis and Clark Elementary School. We didn't have anybody till Friday, and now we had two candidates, and they're both great candidates as well. So, and then the at-large spot, there's one at-large, and we have three candidates running for the at-large spot. Two are incumbents, and then a new candidate, so Jorge Chacon. And so then when you look at all of it, and you go, we got contested races in what I saw three of the five that are up. The negative is the mayor is running unopposed, and you might think it's odd that I would say it's a negative. It's, on one hand, it's good for me to not to have to, you know, run a race, but, you know, for democracy and debate, you'd always want to have some sort of a candidate. And then Councilmember Kulas also has a free ride in his district as well. So, you know, someone was asking me, well, do you think it's, you know, accomplished what it's supposed to accomplish in terms of getting a part of our community sort of involved? I think speaking mostly of the Hispanic community, and I say, you know, I don't look at it as Hispanic versus the Anglo. It's, to me, it's District 1 is going to have a voice specific to District 1, as will District 4, as will District 5. And so, to me, it's more of about the community having somebody that's their neighbor in their area that they can go to for issues regarding the city. and it's not so much the other discussion. So I would give us I'd give us a B plus. I think we did pretty well. I think time will tell, give us another 3 or 4 election cycles and see where things stand. The council has done they're in districts now. I haven't seen too much of, hey, what's in it for my district? What are you doing here for District 3? Or what are you doing for District 2? Or how come sidewalks are going in District 1 and not District 4? And, some of that sort of discussion that I think people have expected. There's been a little bit of it, but not as much as some might think. And I want those council members to say, not only do I represent my district, but I represent the city at whole. And you got to keep both of those things in mind.
This process was spurred by in some other community or other cities. There was the threat and actual follow through on lawsuits. Does this quell that, or are we still in some jeopardy that there may be some legal concerns against the city of Wenatchee? What is your feeling on that?
Well, I would say this. The Voters' Right Act that passed in Olympia a couple years ago really gave any voter the right, if they felt disenfranchised, to sue the local government. So that is still there, and any disenfranchised voter can sue tomorrow. Our job is, can we defend what it is that we did, right? Yeah, we put a community group together. We put 11 folks on it from all walks of life. They reported back to us they wanted us to do districts in some form, either 7 or 5 and 2. So we went through a public process. We did it. We deliberated it. We sort of waited for the Voters' Rights Act laws to get enacted. Some of the stuff that was confusing is, when you run in the primary at the district level, can you run in the general at the district level? And state law didn't allow you to do that until they adopted the Voters' Rights Act. So once the Voters' Rights Act got adopted, now we could do primary and general elections just within the districts, seemed to make a little bit more sense. So then when we adopted it, we felt like we were in accordance with what the Voters' Rights Act of Washington said and the federal law. So I think we think we're in pretty good shape. A judge would have to decide that. The council did what they thought was best for our city, which was the 5 and 2. And so far, I think we're just kind of plugging away at it. And again, I think time will tell in 10 or 12 years. Yakima and Pasco both sort of led the charge on this. Yakima because they got sued and lost their court case at the federal level. Pasco because they really wanted it and couldn't get there because federal law and state law were not the same. And so we're sort of following with those in terms of making that happen, and I think so far so good.
So only voters in District 1 will be voting in November for though either of their candidate of choice in that District 1 race. In this case, Roberto Vargas Mata and Jose Luis Cuevas.
Yeah, and I think, the way that these got divided, they got divided by population, so there's roughly 32 or 3,300 not registered voters, but voters who could be registered to vote. And then if you look at it and you say, well, if you get 50% voting, there could be, 1,200 votes cast in one of these districts. And so you need to get sort of 600 to 650 votes, one would think would be enough. And that's a pretty small population of folks to get to vote yes for. So I really think it's going to be, sort of hand-to-hand, door-to-door, hi, I'm your candidate, and I'm running for this, and this is what I believe in. I think that will go a long way because you only have to do it in your district and not citywide. And it's difficult to doorbell the entire city.
Should make both of these candidates pretty responsive then to, you would think, to their particular district.
Yeah, I think you would. And we're already seeing some of that. We have a couple of housing subdivisions that are a bit controversial. Somewhere at the appeal level, and the neighbors had figured out, they go, oh, I want to have a meeting, and I'm going to invite my council member who represents my district. And so I know council member Esparza has been invited to some for her district. And I know council member Harold has got invited to some stuff for her district, and I know council member Kulas has. So it's nice to see that when the neighbors have a concern about something going on in the city, they know exactly who their council member is, their council member is responsive. And then the council member comes back to me and says, hey, here's what was discussed and what can the city do to sort of help. So I think it's worked out pretty well.
Kind of the analogy would be if there was an issue facing someone let's say, over in Moses Lake, they don't need to invite the 8th District Congresswoman. They just need to invite Congressman Dan Newhouse.
Yep.
Even though it's kind of an issue that kind of affects this general area, they need to invite Congressman Newhouse out of the 4th District, not Congresswoman Schreier.
Right.
So it's been pointed out that Councilman Mike Poyer really sort of in a self-sacrificial vote supported this district concept, even though he was going to end up losing his district the way this process came about, and also could have gone for one of the at-large seats. But I know that you've taken the time to point out that he saw the better good in this process.
I think a lot of them did. You know, there's nothing harder than looking at the map and looking at the rules that were in place at the time and saying, if I vote for districts, then the next election comes up, I'm put in a district where I don't live, so I can't run there. So the only my only choice is to run for an at-large seat against two or three other council members who have the same thing happening to them. Right? So, you know, Councilmember Harold, Councilmember Markhart, and Councilmember Poyer all sort of knew when they voted this way that if they wanted to stay on city council, they all would have to run against each other.
And, or move.
Or move. And yeah. Moving is, I think, asking a lot of your council members. So, you know, so Mike just decided not to run. Linda and Lyle are going to run against each other, and that's fine. And so we will end up with two, maybe three new council members, two for sure out of the two districts. One in, I think it's four. And then, you know, if Jorge wins the at-large, we could, so we'll end up with either two or three new council members, January 1 of 2020, and, two new perspectives and two new, you know, work for the mayor to educate on how cities work and government, how it works and those sorts of things, but, always great to have new perspective and new ideas.
Well, like you said, we'll see how this process continues into the future and perhaps attracting even more folks. So once maybe people sort of figure out, hey, I only have to kind of go after, you know, a much smaller area, don't have to doorbell the entire city, what have you. Is it your hunch that we'll see even more candidates moving into the future in some of these smaller campaign areas?
I would think so. I would think that you would get, again, to not have to campaign throughout the whole city is important. I think, you know, then it looks at the cost of doing a campaign. If you're not doing one throughout the whole city, just in your own little area, can you get by with just doorbelling and handing out some postcards? Do you have to have the campaign signs? Do you have to have some of the other sorts of things that go on? So hopefully the costs sort of come down a little bit. And that gets more people sort of involved and want to represent their community. So let's hope that people stay engaged and involved and want to represent and want to watch, have a say in how your city gets developed. And so I hope so. I hope it keeps going.
So you didn't draw a challenge. Did you expect that?
I actually expected one challenger to put their name in the hat. Didn't happen. I watched it pretty closely sort of through, Friday at 5. And usually when you're in election mode, you know, on election day at 9 o'clock after the votes have been tallied, you sort of get to have a celebration, right? And you get to go, okay, get to do this again. I won. We put in the time, the effort, the energy, get your committee together and have a beer and celebrate. And sort of it happened Friday at 5 o'clock, and I looked online, and no one ran against me, and I just kept going about my normal day. So it was sort of, I don't know, a weird sense of, it was just, again, different than it's been every other time I've ran, where it's November, and it's after a long campaign, and you're tired, and you're glad you won, and you sort of celebrate. This sort of happened anticlimactic, I guess, if you would.
Is it like drawing an intentional walk in baseball? You're up there ready to swing, and you get four wide ones.
I would say an intentional walk with the bases loaded, because at least you scored a run at the end of the day. It wasn't like you were just sacrificially thrown to first base, right? The end result was when you went up to bat, you wanted to get the guy in from third, and ultimately when I put my name in the hat, I wanted to represent the city for another 4 years, and I got the chance to do it. So I would say drawing a walk with the bases loaded was probably a pretty good analogy.
Okay, you got the ribby.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, we're out of time. Just a real quick update. We had one of the police officers in on what is today? I'm losing track.
Today's Thursday, so probably Thursday. Tuesday maybe.
I guess it was Monday. We had one of the police officers in to remind that summer is just about here. Tomorrow night is high school graduations. Watch the skateboard use and bicycle use in downtown Wenatchee. I also know that the city has put out an emphasis on making sure that you're controlling goat heads on your property as well.
We've been working really hard with Doug Pauley and the Goat Head Warriors on trying to eradicate the city from goat heads. Have had some remarkable success over the last couple of years in terms of we've had some folks out on little four-wheelers spraying and working hard to eradicate goat heads. There's nothing worse than getting a new bike for a kid that wants to go out and exercise and ride their bike to school or something and then get a goat head and have to fix a flat tire, or, you know, some parts of our community wouldn't fix it or wouldn't know how to fix it. And so I think the work has been great. We've actually made it a noxious weed now inside the city. It's illegal to have them on your property. Not that we're going to come arrest anybody, but our code enforcement folks will be working with the neighborhood to make sure that, and listen, at my little office building on Washington Street, I've had goat heads from time to time, and I have had to go out and cut them and spray them and make sure that they don't get to a point where they bloom. And so I'm watching them very closely on my properties, and I just hope that others in our community do the same thing. They're a nasty weed.
And dog owners will appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to start hot sealing, or what's the term for
this? I call it a hot mix. Yeah. So in the past, when you've seen us sort of do a chip seal, you put down the oil, and then you put the rock on the top of it, and you sort of drive over it and throw some sand on over it and call it good. So we're going to do what's called a hot chip seal, which means you mix the rock and the oil together before it goes down, and you can sort of roll it on a street. We're going to do 46 lane miles or some 15 miles of city roadway this year. So Western Avenue, I think most of the east-west arterials, you know, Cherry and Washington and 5th and Springwater, and most of those sorts of streets are going to get sealed up. Makes them last quite a bit longer if you can get them sealed and keep the water from getting into the cracks and breaking them up. So you saw a lot of work in downtown Wenatchee last year. State DOT had a big project through downtown, and then the city paid to have the side streets paved. That, I thought, went really, really well. So here we are again, working another, again, 46 lane miles or 15 miles of roadway will get done this year on the hot chip. And then we got another big project next year to sort of keep our roads sealed up. And then we're sort of out of money and out of a plan. So we've got an initiative this fall that wants to take away our $20 car tabs, which is almost $600,000 a year to the city road fund, which you see, and that money is being spent on those projects. So it'll be interesting to see, 2021 and into the future, what our street program looks like. But we're spending some money from our savings account last year, this year, and next year, and then it'll be interesting to see what kind of a program we can put together.
Okay. Well, why don't we have you come back next time we have you, and maybe talk about how things like Initiative 1648 comes into play.
I've seen the term limits for
tax increases.
Yeah, that's one that's going to be, they got to get a lot of signatures in a short period of time. So I know I've seen some stuff on Facebook and other social media about them out attracting signatures. So we'll see if they can get that to the finish line and get that in front of the voters as well.
All righty. Mayor Frank Kuntz joining us today on The Agenda. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for being here. When we come back, we'll talk with the Douglas County Sheriff, Kevin Morris.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
All right. Joining us, the Douglas County Sheriff, Kevin Morris, who last time he was here was along with a host of fellow law enforcement to announce the Everybody Walks campaign. And it was kind of his turn to come in, but he rounded up Chelan County Sheriff Brian Burnett, Ray Coble, East Wenatchee Assistant Police Chief, and also Captain Ron Huss from the Washington State Patrol, and Eastmont High School Principal Lance Noel was running behind, but we did get a chance to interview him afterwards. The Everybody Walks campaign, reaching its kind of pinnacle right now because the graduations are tomorrow night. Sheriff Morris, just want to make sure that the kids are safe, but you guys are making sure that there aren't any of these dangerous parties that could endanger somebody's lives.
Absolutely. So our teams have been working diligently, following every lead they can. We've been fortunate in Douglas County, have not been advised of any of these types of parties where, you know, kids will be drinking and then leave. I know Chelan County has had a couple, Birch Mountain and another one, I think, this weekend. I talked to the sheriff this morning, and he said it looks like they're up to, like, almost 50 MIPs.
That's minors in possession?
Yep. Sorry about that.
I figured out the lingo just on the fly there. So
yeah.
That's what you guys call it in the business, right?
That is correct. And they found out about some of these events from anonymous folks, which means that, you know, this media blitz, if you will, has worked. Folks are out there and they are supporting this. Let's keep our kids safe. So I'm happy it's working, and I suspect this is going to become a long time tradition for us law enforcement folks.
Good. You know, these kinds of things have kind of been a rite of passage, kind of a tradition, but, you know, when we have the kinds of tragedies that we saw last year, you know, for lack of a better word, it's sobering. We never want to see that kind of stuff. No one intended for any of that to happen. We never thought it would, but it did. And glad that everyone's really kind of stepping up their game to prevent this. So you're getting anonymous tips.
Yeah, that was what I've been told, is that Chelan County received an anonymous tip of a potential underage party, and so they investigated that, and lo and behold, they found one.
How do you call the Douglas County Sheriff's Office or tip them off anonymously? I mean, one would assume you've got caller ID.
Right.
So if you're a little nervous, hey, they're going to know who I am. How do you do that anonymously?
Right. Well, you call Rivercom. Rivercom is the dispatch center for all of us. So you call Rivercom, and you simply tell them, I want to stay anonymous, but I'd like to report this. And they honor that request, really. So they put anonymous in the name file, and then they relay the information, then we take it from there.
Good to know. So the National Night Out event is going to be hosted by the Douglas County Sheriff's Office this year. And so tell us about that event coming up.
Right. So each law enforcement agency, we pass the baton, if you will. This National Night Out event has been an event for I can't tell you how many years. I don't have that on top of my head, but it's been a while. And so we pass the baton. East Wenatchee Police Department and the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, we're co-hosting. We're working together under Sheriff Kale and Assistant Police Chief Ray Coble are kind of heading it up for each of our agencies. And I think they've met four or five times already. And with folks in the community that that regularly participate and assist in this program. And really what National Night Out is a celebration of community and law enforcement working together. And it's a night where we can kind of just highlight that, and we encourage the community to come. We have displays. We talk about some safety things, but it's a relaxed environment. So August 6th, which is when it is every year, and it's going to be hosted at the Eastmont Parks in East Wenatchee from 6 at night till 7:30, hour and a half. And, again, we encourage people to come. We're going to continue to put this out and as we get closer and closer. But every time I come here, I'll probably mention it.
Okay. No, that'll be fun. We usually like to get over there and be at that. So we'll come over and bring a tent and do a little live broadcasting or what have you. So put that on your calendar. So we've just passed June 1st here in the last couple of days, typically the date when burn bans come into effect. And with our neighbors over in Grant County on everyone's minds, the big fire that they've had that swelled up to about 20,000 acres, the first big fire of, late spring, almost summer here in about a week or so, roughly, wildfires, brush fires are on everybody's minds.
Yes, it is. Yeah, June 1st just doesn't bring new legislative laws into effect generally. It brings in our fire season. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, and she made a statement to me. We don't know it is summer anymore. It's never called summer anymore. It's called fire season. That's unfortunate, but it is absolutely true. And I just want to remind our community that there is a burn ban in effect June 1st, and it is lifted October 1st. The only allowable fire burning is recreational, like a small, controllable, like campfire. And then that's allowable in a safe pit, safe time, being reasonable, unless things change, and then they may, you know, provide additional restrictions. But right now, no burning outside of that small recreational. And I just like to encourage folks to use good sense. And as everybody has been around, the wind has been blowing pretty hard for the last 3-4 days. One little spark can go a long ways real quick.
And, of course, Douglas County is a county where we've got a lot of farming activity. There is just the process of operating farm equipment. Guys running along in a field with a farm implement, and there can be something that can hit a rock and start something. So some of these fires are just purely unavoidable. There's just no way around it. We don't need to add to the threat and the demand on resources by doing something careless.
Absolutely. And another thing that has created fires in the past is vehicles that aren't well-maintenanced, or trailers. If you're not, you know, maintaining your vehicle, especially a trailer, we've had several of these where the bearings are drying out, they get hot, and then maybe lose a wheel. What was it, 2 years ago we had that by Turtle Rock. There was a fire that took off, and you wouldn't think it, but, you know, hot embers coming off a poorly maintenanced vehicle can create a fire for us as well. So there's so many things that we can do just to be preventative.
And, of course, chains dragging with hauling boats and things like that. Remember
Certainly.
The one, it was in November last year over in the Kashmir area that started a fire. We were wondering, how do we get a fire that big in November of all times? But your wife's right. They can happen really at any time. Be careful. We also have with the Department of Natural Resources now this fire rating fire danger rating system that kind of a new description that we'll have to get used to based on kind of the areas of the state that we live in, and so you'll be hearing some information about that as well. We're talking with the Douglas County Sheriff, Kevin Morris. Now, our governor has signed a measure into law that declares Washington State a sanctuary state. And want to ask if there's been any impact to your operations and interactions with the community when we come back after the break. We're at 12:46 now on the agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
Well, we're at 12:51 now, and just in our remaining minutes with the Douglas County Sheriff, Kevin Morris. And I wanted to ask the sheriff, the governor has signed the measure into law that makes our state a sanctuary state, and under this legislation, state and local authorities aren't able to question people about their immigration status except in limited cases where there's a criminal investigation going on. Just wondered how this law is impacting deputies on the side of the road as someone that they have detained. How is that effectively impacting the Douglas County Sheriff's operations?
Right. Effectively, it's not impacting us at all. I've read through this law, and like any new law, it takes a few reads. I've had a brief conversation with our prosecutor just to make sure we're in the same ballpark playing field. Talked to Sheriff Burnett, make sure in the valley we're thinking the same things. That's just good police work. But as it pertains to this law on the first read, I see no impact to us. We don't stop and detain just to find that out. That's outside of our purview. That's our federal partners who do that. This legislation does, though, speak towards communication with our federal partners, whose primary duty is immigration laws. And we're not restricted when it pertains to a criminal matter. So we're not going to stop communicating with our federal partners who deal with immigration. We're going to communicate. But, again, it is restricted to criminal matters, which is what we've already done. So really not enough hours in the day for us to try to do the other. Again, we're plenty busy with public safety.
Now, of course, the story that we always hear is that when the federal authorities want the local authorities to detain someone, that in these sanctuary states or these sanctuary cities, that the local authorities are being prevented from doing that or blocked from doing that. Doesn't this law now prevent you from doing that according to the governor's orders? So that's my, I guess that's my question now. Now, how does that affect you?
Right. Solely on a civil detainer is what they're calling a civil detainer. And that is to detain somebody to determine whether or not they're here or not legally is that civil detainer, as I understand it. And again, we've really never done that. We don't detain for our federal partners for that sole purpose. There is a criminal element involved, whether we're investigating that crime or if they have a felony warrant, you know, then certainly that does not restrict us from doing our job. That's part of our, within our purview.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to be checking on the numbers on Wall Street with Stifel Nicolaus. Quick reminder, new fire restrictions now in effect. We want to remind people of the Everybody Walks campaign. So word out there that folks may have of some of these dangerous gatherings, we want to make sure that all the graduating seniors and really any young people, minors in possession, I guess is the term, are able to safely participate in their ceremonies, or kids of any age. That's what this campaign is all about. All the local authorities are a part of this, and if you learn about one of these activities and events, let Rivercom know. You can do so anonymously. It's already paid off, it looks like, here with a couple of events that have been broken up and some arrests made.
Yes, there has. Yeah, absolutely. We encourage you, if you've come across some information, give us a call so we can prevent a potential tragedy from happening.
All right. Hope it's a safe weekend for all of our graduating seniors and some of the other kids that may be attending some of these events. Sheriff, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time around on the agenda.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dave.
All righty. 1255 on News Radio 560 KPQ.